Gary from St. Louis.
Hey, Gary.
Hi. You wanted serious contact? Well, I'm going to give it to you. I have had multiple encounters since the age of 5 years old. I will not get into all of the encounters. It would take too much time.
So, but you're a contactee, a real contactee.
Yes, I am.
Began when you were five. Well, that is pretty typical. Contactees frequently have it all their life.
That's correct. Back in 1969, shortly before the Apollo 11 moon launch, I was on a one-night campout in a field behind my scoutmaster's house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a one-night outing to prepare us for longer outings during the course of the summer. I was approximately 15 years old.
Sure.
And my buddy and I were in a, we had 22 scouts attending, and it was approximately 2 o'clock in the morning. And my buddy and I were lying in a two-man tent telling dirty cow jokes. I remember that vividly. And an object approached out of the east, headed due west. At first, we thought it was a small aircraft because of the fact that we had a small private airport 5 miles due west of us. But it seemed unusual that a small airplane would be landing that time of evening. Usually, most of the smaller aircraft would land during the day. The object then all of a sudden approached us rapidly, and it got within 50 feet of us. It was hovering silently. It had lights rotating around its outer rim, rotating rapidly in opposing directions.
How big was this?
Approximately the size of a football field.
That's really big. All right.
Yeah. The lights were rotating the outer perimeter of the craft in opposing directions, reds, greens, yellows, and blues. Had a wobbly effect, and also we noticed that prior to the appearance of the craft, you know, it was a beautiful summer night. The stars were out. We had a slight breeze. The crickets were, you know, doing their thing. And but when the craft approached, everything went silent. I mean, totally silent. My buddy was freaking out. I wanted to scream to get the other scouts awake to come out to be witnesses to what we were viewing.
Sure.
But for some reason, I couldn't do it. I mean, I literally tried to scream to get them up, but I could not do it.
Right.
Now, I wasn't, for some reason, I wasn't as scared as my buddy. And just for the heck of it, I played games with this thing. I just basically looked up at it and said, if you can hear us, we're going to move so many feet in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get there, I want you to come over to us. And I'm thinking, you know, that I'm just blowing wind. Well, we started walking in a particular direction. The craft just remained there wobbling and hovering. And then finally, when we got to a specific point, the object came over to us, I mean, so fast. I mean, you didn't even have time to blink your eye. It was there that quick. And then that's when I freaked out. Well, it finally bypassed over our heads far enough and sat down in the field. The outer perimeter lights went off, and then I noticed on the lower carriage of the object a rippling effect, a wavy rippling effect, like some of the metallic structure of the object was turning to liquid.
Where did this happen?
This happened in Gaithersburg, Maryland.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I noticed a wobbly, wavy ripple effect, like water, and all of a sudden a elongated opening appeared in the lower section of the craft, and a very bright, white, intense light came out of it. And then a larger opening then appeared, and then a very small ramp elongated out of the craft to the ground. Immediately, and from my 30 years of research since that encounter, I can honestly say that the occupant that departed the craft was a typical gray, very short, large head, dark eyes, approached us and stopped within 10 feet of us. And then I also noticed two other humanoid forms in each side of the doorway peering out. And they appeared to be wearing jumpsuits. They had long hair. I couldn't distinguish the color. It was pretty dark, even though they were in the white, very bright white light. Now, but anyway, the occupant of the craft basically immediately gave me, I imagine telepathically, because I didn't see any its mouth move, and its mouth was no more than a slit, gave me an equation. And then immediately, I would say within 30 seconds, panicked and turned and literally ran back into the craft. And according to the people that are investigating my cases currently,
you've got
the wobbly effect was considered the only way physics can describe that.
You've got legitimate investigators on your case. Who?
I have a Mr. Jim Cross, who was originally associated with MUFON and now is doing independent research.
Right.
I had held on to that equation for more than 30 years, and finally wrote a letter to the J. Allen Hynek Center for UFO Studies and received a letter back from a Frank John Reed, who wrote me a letter.
You included the equation.
Yes, I did. And he basically, in short, wrote, "I must honestly say that items of information like your equation usually do not prove out. This would not disprove the reality of the experience. How could we know that such an item was not a deliberate red herring of the aliens?" Now, he suggested that I contact a Mr. John Carpenter out of Springfield, Missouri.
Right.
Mr. Carpenter contacted me by phone, and his opinion was, well, let's forget about the red herring. Let's consider that possibly the extraterrestrial gave you the equation just to see what you would do with it.
Do you now know, have any idea what the equation means?
Well, this is where it gets extremely interesting.
Okay.
Mr. Cross had been, for a number of years, had been working on an equation of his own called the Thames equation. And
which was an equation to what?
Well, the equation I don't fully understand. This is something that he has not fully touched base with me on. It's pretty complicated. I know the answer. I have it right here in front of me, and I couldn't tell you what all these little symbols and all these little letters.
All right, so we've got to get to the bottom line. What was his opinion of the equation? I mean,
well, during the course of our investigation, he asked me if he could take my equation home and play with it, because the Thames equation, he had a missing piece. He could not get it to work.
Okay, bottom line, was this the missing piece?
Yes, it was. He took an equation that I received during an encounter in 1969 and almost 30-some-odd years later incorporated it into his equation.
Okay, well, how can you not have asked what this equation was?
Well, his equation, the part in reference to the equation will be explained to me in detail. We haven't gotten that far yet.
All right. Well, when you do, I want to hear about it. In the meantime, I absolutely appreciate the call. But until we understand either what he was working on or how this filled that out or what it all means, at any rate, when you get the rest of that, I'd be most interested.